This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hello, my fellow Americans. This is episode number 73 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Am I the only one watching the debates tonight?
I know I'm not. I was watching it beforehand and it was just like the shade of it all.
Yep.
Speaking of shade, did you see that the Wizards Twitter account has been kind of shady lately? They released the banned and restricted announcement, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. And when they made the announcement on Twitter, they posted a picture of a crab. And I was like, are you trying to say that we're crabby because we didn't get the, that is shade. For anybody who wants to know what shade is where you make a subtle jab at somebody. So when they posted the picture of the crab, I was like, oh, you're trying to say that we're crabby because we didn't get the things that we wanted. Well played, Wizards. So very impressed with whoever's been running the Twitter account lately because there's some Boku shade happening there. So let's go ahead and get started. So this past weekend, I pre-released. Chris, I believe you did more pre-releasing than even Hallie this time.
Mm-hmm.
I did four.
Oh, jeez.
What did you do?
I just kind of went for it. I planned on doing one, and somehow 11 o'clock last night, I was driving home for my fourth one. So,
I mean, did you just like the set that much, or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yes. It is just awesome. Just love it.
Well, tell us about, like, everything you did. Four.
Okay. So the first one was a singles event that I went to. My pool was pretty awesome. I opened up a lot of stuff that was strong in green, blue, red, so I decided to go teamer with it. Some like notable like artifacts that I pulled were Prophetic Prism, which was just awesome because you can tap a colorless to make any color that you need at the time. So playing three colors, especially with that, was not hard to do. I had a Panharmonicon, which was awesome. And there's so many things that have ETB effects and other little triggers. So I was like, woohoo, I'm just gonna do this more than once because that's what that does. And then I also had a fabrication module and a decoction module, which I'm sorry, I'm 12. It has a funny name. and like, so all those things worked very, very well together. And I had just some really good like synergies. I had a minister of inquiries, you know, going and doing stuff with, you know, the triggers and getting energy. And I had an aether theorist. So I'm like scrying and trying to set up my draws. And it was just very flowy. Like I loved how everything was able to work well together. Cause sometimes you get a pool and some things just are not like the others. And I also was lucky in that when I opened it up, I had not just a combustible Gear Hulk, but also a Virtuous Gear Hulk.
Man. So,
I know. I was like, this is fine. And like when you're pulling Voltic Brawler and like other stuff, I'm like, okay, I definitely want green and red. And there's, you know, blue things in here. That's awesome. Glint Nest Crane did work.
Yay.
So good. Oh my God. It was just awesome because then like I also had, was that the time that I had the angel? I did so many. I'm trying to remember like if what I had when, but just like, you know, especially if you're like bouncing things, you know, with the one angel, you can bounce the Glint Nest Crane, you know, comes back in and then you get to go look for an artifact again. So it's just, I just, oh my God, it was just so much fun for the first one. I was kind of disappointed that I was not able to make it into, like, essentially the top eight for that. But it was cool. I pulled some good stuff. I pulled a foil Spire Bluff Canal. I don't really need that, but I can get rid of it. I had some good, you know, spells to help me with my deck. I had a Larger Than Life, a Harnessed Lightning, Nature's Way, Select for Inspection, all good things that still worked very well with my deck. And overall, even though I didn't do like the best, I felt that my deck was well put together and I felt really confident about what I was doing. The second event I went to was like right after the first one, and it was Two-Headed Giant. And so I did that with my friend Robert, and I, again, pulled a Virtuous Gear Hulk.
Ma'am.
Yes.
Come open my packs.
I know, right? A non-foil Spire Bluff Canal. And I forgot in the first one and in the second one, I also pulled a Padim. And so that was pretty awesome. Making your artifacts hexproof is pretty cool.
Especially when you have a Virtuous Gear Hulk.
Yes, it was like, yeah, you want to do something about this, but you can't. It's funny. So it was just good. And then all of that event is somewhat of a blur, and there was like some funny stuff with that too. But I also remember pulling two Smuggler's Copters and an Inventor's Sphere, which I ended up not using because it didn't work well with everything else that I ended up throwing all together. But I still felt that even though that deck might not have been as strong as the first one, I still had fun playing the event. Two-Headed Giant is a very interesting format, and I have now played it with several different partners, and it's just interesting to kind of see how you go about building your deck and your partner goes about building theirs. And we actually had to rebuild his deck maybe the third game in, I think it was. No, third round. We played five rounds of Two-Headed Giant, I think it was.
Wow,
it
felt that's a lot.
I know. It felt like it was a million years. But after we revamped his deck, it was a lot better. It wasn't terrible to start with, but just it just didn't synergize very well. And once we redid it, things started working out a lot better, which was awesome. We did have some opponents the fourth round, I think it was.
You've got to talk about these.
Yeah. So when they had sat down, I thought at first it was going to be this guy and his girlfriend that were playing because I had seen them open their packs, but then I didn't see them up until round four. Well, apparently it was this gentleman and his friend that were going to do it, and his girlfriend was just kind of with him. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Girlfriends, boyfriends, accompany their significant others, whatever, two events. Cool. But the boyfriend was not paying any attention to what was going on. And so his partner is making all the plays for them, all the decisions, tapping his mana for him, telling him, well, do this, then, and you want to play this. And, he's just talking to his girlfriend. He's, laying with his head back behind the chair, he'd rather be anywhere else. Even in the moment. Yes. And it started to wear on me because, we're going to say, okay, I'm going to play this. Is there a response? Is there anything going on? Okay, cool. Or he'd be like, well, let me see that a second. Then he would look at his opponent's hand, partner's hand, and then be like, well, actually, we're going to do this or something. And I finally said to his partner, you need to pay attention. And he was like, what? And I was just like, you're not. I'm like, why are you here? I said, if you didn't want to play, why even waste your time being here? I'm like, you could be doing anything else, because that's kind of how you're acting right now, is you'd rather be doing anything else. And I was like, if you don't know how to play, that's totally fine. But how do you expect to get any better if you're not even paying attention? And he kind of had that early teen reaction where an older person is telling you something and you're just kind of laughing they're old and they don't know anything type of thing. That was kind of the reaction I got from him initially. And so I just kept on giving him the eye after that, just being like, are you paying attention? Because I'm watching you. And it was just very frustrating. We ended up losing to them because we were going to win, and then there was some kind of play that happened. I don't even remember. And I don't know. I had to call him a shrub just because it was kind of how it felt. It was just he was just sitting there. He could have been an inanimate object for all I knew, that was just sitting there with cards in front of him. And it was just kind of disappointing, because part of the reason I like doing Two-Headed Giant is because you get to have that interaction with not just one opponent, but two opponents. And sometimes, you're against people that are really awesome. Sometimes you're against people that are overly competitive. And sometimes you're against people that are we're brand new, we know nothing. And we're cool, we can all, learn along the way. And the set was so much fun that, that kind of actually put a little damper on my evening just because I was like, I want you to be excited about this too, and you're just not acting like you care whatsoever. And actually, the first round, we were going to draw, and I conceded to my opponents, who I know from my local game store, and I was like, you know what? A draw doesn't feel good for anyone. I would rather have you get there because you probably would have won anyway, and I would rather have you get something. And so, actually, later on, he ended up giving me some packs just out of the kindness of his heart, being like, hey, thanks for conceding to us. And I was like, oh, aww. No worries. Yeah. So, karma is good in Magic sometimes. The third event I did was another Jesus, I can't even talk. Another singles event. And it was kind of just very impromptu. Like, I didn't set an alarm Sunday morning. I just kind of woke up and was like, well, it's 10:30. I should probably go do that pre-release. So I did. I wanted to make sure to do color combinations that I hadn't already done. So I went with, Esper, because I had some really good stuff in white and blue, and I figured I would splash some black to play some cool cards. Artifacts, I got a Snarethopter, which was awesome. You know, I can't argue with something that flies and has haste. A Glassblower's Puzzle Knot, and Prophetic Prism again, which, Jesus, is just awesome. The Enchantment Authority of the Consoles, oh my god, does mad work. So good. So good.
That's the one, the one for one white that gains you life like a Blind Obedience?
Yes. Yeah. So it's like Blind Obedience, but no Extort. Yeah, it was awesome. Now, I did have one game during that where my opponent, or excuse me, one round where my opponent also had an Authority of the Consoles.
Oh, no.
So we're just like, you an Authority and I'm an Authority and we're going to do things and oh my gosh, and gain like a bajillion million life. So that was interesting. That particular time, I ended up getting two Aether Theorists. The card is just baller so far. Like, I just love it. A Minister of Inquiries again. Janjeet Sentry. So all those cards work very well together to be like, you know, I'm going to make energy. I'm going to spend energy. I'm going to make you tap things. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to scry. And it was just like awesome. I was just doing all the things. There was a Master Trinketeer that I had, which was cool. So I'd be making like servos at my opponent's end step. Propeller Pioneer, which was really cool. And, you know, even in the article that Hallie wrote, she talks about, you know, Propeller Engineer or Propeller Pioneer makes you have to think about decisions. Do you want servos? Do you want a counter on your dude? And so sometimes, you know, I would see which one was more advantageous for me. Whisper Weaver Angel, awesome. Just awesome. And I got an Angel of Invention too. So I'm just like exiling things and getting their ETB effects again and just doing all the stuff and lifelink and vigilance, and it was just great. I also got a Fumigate, so I was able to wait till my opponent like loaded up their board and just wipe it, gain like a shit ton of life. Diabolic Tutor, just cool. Okay, I'm gonna go find this Angel, or I'm gonna go find this Fumigate, or whatever it is I need. And Select for Inspection again, awesome. I had two of those. And I also ended up pulling a Restoration Gearsmith and a Kambal Console of Allocation, which was a foil and my promo. So I was pretty excited about that. And I had a lot of fun at that event. I played against a lot of people that I love to play against, and I was just like ready for more. So by the time I got to my fourth event, which was also a singles event, I decided again, try to play some color combinations I hadn't done before. I ended up going Jeskai. And I had an Inventor's Goggles, Eager Construct, Multiform Wonder, Smuggler's Copter again, you know, all these really awesome artifacts. And then one of the vehicles that I kept on, messing up the name the entire time I played it, it's the Bamat Bazaar Barge. I kept on saying Bamat Bazaar Barrage, like Berserker Barrage in Marvel vs. Capcom. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't mean that. And then I had, you know, again, some awesome creatures. I had Gearshift Ace, Whispweaver Angel, again, Visionary Augmenter, Glintness Crane for the win, again, just like awesome cards. And my pool was just insane. I had three Revoke Privileges. That is crazy. And so I knew that I would have to play them, and it was just so much fun. I ended up getting a pack no matter where I played, because my LGS was giving packs away even to the people that did not place well. He's like, if you didn't receive anything, please come up and see me. And they gave us all a pack, thanked us for playing. The stamina event I went to last night, you got 4 packs as long as you played all the rounds. And then if you went 3-1, you got a pack per win. So there was just like a, you know, just a bunch of fun stuff involved. My LGS was able to work with Star City to get some playmats from them and put their logo on them. They gave them away as random prizes and also to first place. They made their own Chandra trophies with like the pop minis. It was just awesome. And I just really, really, really like this set. And I never thought that I would be this into playing like a limited format. And I'm just like all about it. And I can't place my finger on exactly why, but it's just so much fun. And so if you haven't done sealed with it, if you plan on drafting, you should definitely do it because it is way too much fun.
I want to go back to the shrub for a minute and the fact that you don't want no shrubs. I'm sorry. I literally was biting my tongue the whole time. I'm just going, I don't want no shrub. Nope, not time yet. Not time yet. So let me just go back to that. So just to be clear, they weren't contributing at all.
No.
Okay. Because, I mean, I've certainly seen situations, you know, I've jokingly dubbed somebody the limpy gazelle where they're like, they're trying really hard and at least they're trying, but then the other person might shoot them down or the other person might gently say, no, you know, all right, girl, let's do this instead. Or like, no, we're actually going to do this time. But, and I can kind of understand that, you know, like I know my local game store in particular, we tend to get a lot of people who are kind of newer to Two-Headed Giant. You know, we look at Two-Headed Giant as very goofy kind of fun format. And so I can understand when somebody sort of, maybe they're working out their chemistry, maybe they're smoothing out how they work together. You know, our Two-Headed Giant also attracts a lot of newer players, so I can understand, you know, you're already new to the game, but then you're also new to the mechanics of Kaladesh, and so you're kind of feeling your way out. And just to be clear, this person was doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And so, Katie, kind of enlighten me here from a judge perspective. There's no, like, rules against that, right? Like, if it's Two-Headed Giant, you can do that, right? Like...
So it has been a while since I've read up on my Two-Headed Giant rules, but I do think that there's a rule where your partner is not allowed to touch your cards. Like, they're not allowed to play for you, if I'm remembering correctly. So I think that they have to, like, tap their own mana and do all of that themselves. So if they're not even doing that, then, yeah, it's just one person playing Two-Headed Giant, which just isn't how Two-Headed Giant works. Like, if one head is just cut off of the giant, it's just a one-headed giant.
Right.
And so, then being a pre-release, you know, because pre-releases are technically casual, like, I assume there's no, like, punishment for that, though, right?
No. If there was a judge at the event, though, like, it probably should have been brought to their attention. Like, somebody's just not, you know, playing so that they could figure out some kind of something else for that person to do, or like have them be talked to, just so it's like, hey, if you're here to play, we'd like it if you could play. But no, there's not actually any like infractions or anything at a casual REL, so there's not a whole lot you can do except kind of give them a nudge.
You yeah. should have brought a ruler with you, Chris. Like, when you said that, I imagined you being like the Catholic nun, like slapping someone's fingers, like, hey, you should have participated.
Well, I think he was probably not either A, expecting me to say anything, or maybe other people hadn't said anything about it, but it was just kind of like, I don't know, like, why waste your time? Like,
yeah,
I got this one life to live. I'm not gonna waste it just diddling around doing nothing. If I could be doing something that is important to me, or if you really want to learn how to play Magic, show some effort. I don't know.
Well, no, I think, you know, you brought up a really good point too, Chris, and that, you know, part of what makes the format fun is sort of the, I mean, maybe this is a bad metaphor, but it almost feels like a double date sometimes, where it's like, you know, you're with your partner, they're with their partner, and it is a very social format. Like, I don't think I've ever played, like, serious Two-Headed Giant. Like, it is pretty goofy, and, you know, you do want to see how the other pair works, and you want to see how you work, and it's fun seeing what cards, you know, hit everybody, you know, that have that kind of wording. And, you know, it is disappointing when you're effectively playing as a pod of three. You know, you go into it wanting that kind of interaction, and when the other party doesn't really deliver that, I get it. It's very upsetting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was disappointing.
Yeah. So, Hallie, you took it easy. You only did two, right?
Yep.
Okay. And how did yours go?
They went pretty well. I mean, I didn't do especially well, but I really enjoyed playing the set just like Chris did. And I, you know, I opened some cool cards and I had some really fun games. So my first pre-release was Saturday night. My store doesn't do Two-Headed Giant, so I just, you know, kind of went it alone, though, of course, I had Robert and Kirby along with me, to keep me company. My first pool was interesting. None of my creatures were especially great. I didn't open any Gear Hulks, though. I don't know if this was true at your pre-release, Chris, but it seemed like, you know, one out of every four or five people opened a Gear Hulk.
Yeah, it felt like they were fairly prevalent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. But none of my creatures in my first pool were especially great. I think the biggest or most impactful creature I really had was like a Wispweaver Angel, which is still, you know, nothing to sneeze at. But you know, a 4/4 Angel in some situations can end the game, but in some situations it kind of gets outclassed. So, you know, there were some matches where I was able to, you know, attack them in the air a couple times and win, and a couple matches where I kind of had to sit back and be a little more cautious. The good thing about that pool was that it had a lot of removal. I ended up playing black-white because I think I had, you know, 7 or 8 pieces of, you know, decent removal between the two colors. I had 2 copies of Revoke Privileges. I had 2 copies of Impeccable Timing. I had a Tidy Conclusions. Let's see, I had a Die Young and a couple creatures that made energy. So I was able to cast it for, I think I gave a creature -5/-5 at one point, which was Whoa. Pretty good. So that was pretty good. And I also had, and eliminate the competition, which proved to be really helpful because while my creatures weren't very big, I did have a bunch of creatures with Fabricate. So if I could make a whole bunch of servos, I could kind of trade off my servos for much bigger creatures and be able to kind of, you know, equalize the board a little bit. So there was one match that I was pretty proud of myself for winning, where I basically got rid of all my opponent's non-vehicle creatures because she had, you know, 2 or 3 vehicles out and she was kind of going all in on this like crewing vehicles thing. And so I realized at a certain point that she only had 3 creatures. So I just got rid of 3, I, you know, traded in 3 servos for 3 creatures and then she couldn't crew any of her vehicles anymore. So that was pretty cool. So yeah, that pool was interesting. I think I built it as well as I could. I didn't do especially well. I think I went 2-2 with it. But you know, I had some fun and really interactive and complex games. So it was still a lot of fun. My second pool was, I would say the creatures were a little bit better, though I didn't have quite as much removal. It was very obvious that I had to play white because I opened an, Angel of Invention. Which is pretty great. I also opened Angel of Invention's little brother Aerial Responder. A couple of us have been calling him Vampire Whitehawk because he's basically the white version of Vampire Nighthawk. So I had those two. So there were a couple games where, you know, I would play against a really aggressive deck and I would just kind of be able to come back and stabilize thanks to those, you know, flying lifelink creatures. So those really came in handy. I also had another Wispweaver Angel in that pool. I had Visionary Augmenter. I had Thriving Ibex, which was actually surprisingly good. Like, I've been very happy with, you know, the thriving creatures, especially since, you know, if you have a lot of creatures that make energy when they come into play, you can just kind of stockpile it up and then put it into, you know, one of those creatures. I would say the best game I played that whole weekend was against a guy named Daniel, who's one of the better players in my area. We were playing, it was kind of a board stall. We just kept playing creatures and, you know, we couldn't really attack through, you know, a lot of them had low power and high toughness, so I couldn't really mount much of an offense. And then I happened to, hold on, I have to look up the card. Let me see. There was this one card that, oh, I know what it is. So we got to the point where, you know, there was this board stall and, I couldn't really attack profitably. And then I drew a copy of Key to the City, which is a 2-mana artifact. If you tap it and discard a card, up to one target creature can't be blocked this turn. And when it becomes untapped, you can pay 2 and draw a card. So, what I ended up doing was, like I said, stockpiling a lot of my energy, and then attacking with my Thriving Ibex and making it unblockable with the key, and then drawing cards off of it on my upkeep, so that I could just keep pitching lands and doing it all over again. And that was how I ended up winning the game, which at the time seemed really unwinnable because, like, we both had, you know, we both had all these ground creatures, and then I got a Wispweaver Angel, and then he exiled it, and then it just seemed like the game wasn't going to come to any kind of a conclusion, and then all of a sudden I just managed to win. And so that was really cool. So I was pretty happy with that deck. I ended up playing white green, which I thought was pretty solid. I had 2 copies of the Riparian Tiger. So, you know, I had another game where I was able to, you know, keep pumping energy into the Tiger and attacking for 6 every turn, which was really nice. But I did have a little bit of a problem with Verdurous Gearhulk this weekend. I played against, I like how you all kind of sighed at the same time.
Well, because that's, I think, the Gearhulk that most people were, you know, I didn't see a lot of great things. Like, when people were talking about, like, the Gearhulk people were most excited about, or the ones that people thought would see play. In my experience, I felt like I was seeing a lot of articles where it was towards the bottom. Like, everybody was raving about the others, but that was sort of, like, the one where people were like, it's fine. And so I'm happy to hear that, like, it did work.
No, it did a lot of work, especially I had one opponent who played the artifact creature that makes your artifacts cost 1 less on turn 3 and then played it on turn 4. So it was really gross. So I played against Verdurous Gearhulk 4 times this weekend. And just about every time it hit the battlefield, I just lost. Like, I didn't always lose on the spot, but, like, I was dead in, like, a turn or two. Because they would either put the counters on a flyer, or they would put the counters on a creature with trample. They could even put the counters on the Gearhulk itself, and it has trample. Like, on an empty board, it's an 8/8 with trample. So there was a game, this was, like, at the very end of the day on Sunday. Like, I had a game where, like, it was game 3. Like, I had come back to win game 2. I was really excited and feeling really good about it. And then my opponent plays this turn 4 Verdurous Gearhulk. And I have a Smuggler's Copter. So I'm thinking, okay, I have a Revoke Privileges and, like, an Artifact Destruction spell somewhere in my deck. So I need to just keep attacking and keep looting until I find one of those cards to get rid of this. Because otherwise, I'm just dead on board. Like, all my creatures are so tiny and they can't soak up, you know, 8 damage from this thing. So I keep looting, and I'm like, I need my Appetite from the Unnatural. Like, this will help me win. And I just couldn't find it. And it was, I mean, I still really enjoy the format, but I tend not to like, you know, cards like that where, you know, they hit the battlefield and they have this ridiculous impact. And it's like, you can't win the game from that standpoint. Like, I don't know. It felt a little bit like, you know, when I've played Fate Reforged Limited and someone has, like, a Citadel Siege or something like that. Like, there are some limited cards that just feel so pushed. And, you know, having to play it, you know, 4 times in a weekend, you know, it's kind of a bad beats kind of thing. But I'm hoping that they're at least less prevalent in regular Kaladesh Sealed, because it is a ridiculous card. Robert was lucky enough to get one. He had a deck where he had 2 Panharmonicons and a Verdurous Gearhulk and a Torrential Gearhulk. So every time he played the Verdurous Gearhulk, he always had a Panharmonicon in play. Like, he would go turn 4 Panharmonicon, turn 5 Gearhulk, and put, like, 8 counters on something, which was really gross. He was really happy with that deck, and he ended up doing very well with it. I have to say, though, my favorite moment of the pre-release was not in a game that I played, or even a game that Robert played, my friend Jordan got the ultimate flavor win against my friend James. James was, he was playing, I think he was playing like a red-white deck. He was really proud of himself because he opened like three copies of Thriving Grubs. And so he's a big Magic the Amateuring fan and a big fan of ours as well. And so he was like really excited that he got to play like his own version of Maria's deck from the pre-release, like with all the Thriving Grubs. So, he and my friend Jordan ended up playing in the first match, like in the first round of one of the pre-releases. And Jordan had the ultimate flavor win of fumigating like three or four of James's gremlins.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was pretty special. overall, I think the set was pretty fun. And I think I've been playing Magic like a little intermittently for a little while. Like this was my first sanctioned event in I think maybe a month. I've just kind of been on and off Magic Online a little bit. But I'm planning on drafting this set like every day because it's super fun.
Yeah, it looks that way.
Yeah, I went to pre-release the other day. I also, like you, Hallie, I've not played a lot of Magic since Legion came out. Most of my time has been spent playing World of Warcraft. And my pool wasn't great. My pre-release promo was the Dynavolt Tower, which is that artifact where anytime you cast an instant or sorcery, you get energy. And then you can spend a bunch of energy to do, I think, 3 damage to a creature or player, which isn't great in Limited. You know, control decks typically aren't a thing in Limited. And so I saw that and my first instinct was to try it at least. And so I was thinking maybe I could do something control-y. So that was a thing I was toying with. I also opened a Metallurgic Summonings, which also would have rewarded me for casting instant and sorceries. And unfortunately, I just didn't have enough good instant and sorceries to really make that happen. The next thing I wanted to try was I was thinking of going in a blue-black artifact direction. I had a couple of the Etherborn that had some artifacts going on with them, had artifact abilities. I had specifically the blue-black Etherborn with lifelink, where anytime you play an artifact, you can scry. And so I was thinking of going in that direction, and I didn't have enough blue-black to really support that either. My red was really strong, so I had eventually decided that whatever I was going to build needed red to be part of it, and it was just a matter of what to play with the red. My white was okay. I didn't have enough to keep that going. I thought about red-blue doing like a tempo thing. I had that red-blue, I think it's a whirler, some little, it's like one colorless, a red and a blue. That was a thing. I didn't have enough to support that though. And so ultimately I ended up going red-green. I didn't really have any bombs to go with it. One of the interactions I really enjoyed is I managed to open 3 self-assemblers. So for those who don't know what that is, that's the 5 colorless 4/4. And when it enters the battlefield, you can go looking for another one. And so I also had a couple copies of Salivating Gremlins, which was whenever an artifact enters the battlefield, it gets 2-0 and trample until end on a turn. So I would play a self-assembler, trigger the gremlins, go looking for another assembler, swing with the gremlins. Next turn, I would play the second self-assembler, trigger the gremlins, swing in with the gremlins, and the self-assembler I cast the previous turn, and I would just chain them. And that felt really good. And my opponents were like, God damn, another one? And I was like, yeah, I've got 3. So that was a lot of fun. Like, I really didn't expect that interaction to be as fun as it was. I didn't expect self-assembler to be as fun as it was. The other rare that I opened was Multiform Wonder. And that is the one where you get 3 energy just for casting it, and then you can pay energy to give it things like flying, vigilance, lifelink, or +2/-2, or -2/+2. And I had a lot of things that also gave me energy. I had some gremlins that gave me energy. I had a couple green cards that did. I also had the gremlin that whenever you gain an energy, it gets +2/+2. Until end of turn. So I had a lot of things that were like enter the battlefield energy artifact type things. I didn't do very well. I lost to Boros Vehicles, which was really fast. Like, no pun intended, but like the vehicles deck was really fast. And Hallie, you had mentioned, you know, playing somebody and kind of keeping her off crew. I actually had the opposite. I felt like crew was extremely difficult to keep people off of, especially because that you can do that even with summoning sickness, which I didn't know about.
Yeah.
And so like if it's a deck that's majority creatures, like you can kill everything and then you're like, whew, I'm safe. And then they top deck a creature and they're like, play crew. And you've got like a 5/5 vehicle coming at you. And so I was very frustrated by crew. I was like, this is really hard to like keep people off of, especially if it's like a vehicle's deck. Very difficult to deal with. So I didn't really feel good about that mechanic. I really like energy. It seemed like there were so many cards that gave you energy. I was really worried about that when I first saw the mechanic. I was convinced that there weren't going to be either enough ways to get it or enough ways to spend it, but the opposite was true. And it seemed like that mechanic went over really, really well at my local game store, and I really enjoyed that as well. So the set was fine. Like I said, my pool wasn't great. I would love to two-headed giant this. I didn't get an opportunity to do that. It seems like it was really well received. Everybody at my store had a really good time. The other thing I was really impressed with was Durable Handicraft. That was the enchantment for one in a green, where whenever a creature enters the battlefield, you can pay one colorless. And if you do, you put a counter on that creature, a +1/+1. And so I was able to like do that, put a counter on it. Lots of enter the battlefield. I also noticed the set involves a lot of choices. I'm immediately thinking of Tatiana from RuPaul's Drag Race and choices. I was making a lot of choices this weekend. And that was a nice change of pace. Like I really like a lot of these cards, you know, depending on where you're at in the game, can do different things for you, or depending on the cards, the other cards you have available can do things for you as well. You know, we're so used to cards just working one way, and I really felt like that added a nice dimension to my games. You know, like certain cards just didn't play the same way twice. And in my opinion, that's kind of how Magic should go. So Kaladesh, you know, we had the pre-release, and after the pre-release, they make a couple announcements. Wizards always make some announcements. And the first one that they made was to the banned and restricted announcement, and nothing changed in any format. Chris, I know you and I tend to play the most modern, and we dabble in Legacy a little bit. So what did you think about this? Like, were there things that you thought were going to get cut, or were there things that you thought were going to get unbanned? Like, what did you think?
I didn't really think that much would be unbanned, if anything. But there was a slight concern that maybe they would ban something for Infect. I know that a lot of people always complain about Becomements, but I think that even if they did ban Becomements, I don't think it needs to be banned.
I'm usually dead Infect before be Becomements.
Word. Exactly. It's just like, you know, Becomements is just like coup de grace. You know, it's not like, it doesn't need it to survive. But I don't know that I really thought that they would ban much other than that personally. I know that you had some things you were definitely concerned about.
Well, I mean, Modern's been getting a lot of criticism lately, and it seems like the one argument that people keep coming back to is the idea of fast mana. The things like Phyrexian mana, Simian Spirit Guide, Delve as a mechanic, Mox Opal. You know, people like to blame the fact of that fast mana exists, and that we don't necessarily, that Modern doesn't have good enough counter spells to really protect you. You know, say what you want about things like Force of Will and Days and Legacy, but they keep the format fair for the most part. And, you know, sometimes it is possible to do really broken things with Simian Spirit Guide. It is really possible to get a Blood Moon out faster, or to have Affinity have this really explosive start. And so people have called for very drastic action, you know, get rid of all the fast mana, slow the format down a little bit. And I knew that it was a long shot, but I was worried that Simian Spirit Guide was gonna get axed. And that's a big part of Ad Nauseam. I don't think the deck could survive without it. I've never enjoyed a deck as much as Ad Nauseam. I've certainly never done as well. I've made 2 day 2s this year with Ad Nauseam, and so I was really worried that I was gonna have to find another deck. And so I was really happy that, you know, Logic kind of won the day, and that the deck, any deck with Simian Spirit Guide, has not put up the results to warrant banning. I didn't really have a dog in the Become Immense fight. I did hear some rumblings about Gitaxian Probe that could hurt Infect. People were saying that was sort of like the real culprit, because it lets Infect really tailor their game when they can see what you have or don't have against them. I think Modern is fine. I think it's very healthy. I was really baffled about Legacy, though, because I feel like Terminus has, or that's how you know it's bad when you just call the deck Terminus. You know, I've been really worried about Miracles, because I feel like Miracles has certainly made a case for itself that something needs to go from that. My friend Ruben Bressler from Magic Mike's cast laid out a really great case that Miracles has just had this dominance that, you know, Splinter Twin, you know, the criteria that they use to ban cards from other decks very clearly applies to Miracles, and somehow Miracles has managed to avoid any sort of banning, whether it be top or counterbalance or what have you. And I know a lot of my Legacy friends are very disappointed, because they're just so tired of Miracles, and, you know, if it were any other deck, we would have seen a ban by now. And so I'm really curious as to why they feel that doesn't warrant it, or, you know, maybe the conspiracy theorists are right and that Wizards doesn't care about Legacy. You know, I'm really curious to see what was the thought process behind that. But Katie and Hallie, do you have any thoughts on the ban announcement?
I didn't really expect anything, I guess, to get banned. It seems like Modern has been pretty healthy the last, like, 6 months-ish, like, 3 months to 6 months ago. Like, I don't know. I feel like I've seen very, like, wide variation in what's making the top eight. You know, sometimes it's eight different decks, sometimes there's multiples, but for the most part, it seems like it's been a pretty, like, well-rounded, healthy format. So I think that it's fine that they keep it like that.
Yeah, I completely agree with Katie. I also have not played a ton of Modern, but from everything I see, the format looks really healthy and really balanced. Aggro decks are definitely popular, but I mean, I think that's always going to be the case because, you know, like you said, Aaron, you know, it's still like a turn three or four format. So I think, I think Modern's in a good place. We'll see what happens after Kaladesh comes out. I know Dredge is going to get a lot of new toys. So we'll see if it becomes completely broken, but, I'm holding out hope that, you know, it'll still be a balanced format. And as for Legacy, another format that I don't play very much of, I know there's been the ban top debate for a while. I know Miracles is one of the most dominant decks. It's possible that it could see a ban at some point, but it doesn't seem like that's too much of a concern right now for whatever reason. Legacy just isn't a very played format, and so I guess change is really slow to come. But I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I know Pauper people... Sorry. I was going to say, I know Pauper people are upset because... Peregrine Drake was not banned.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I keep seeing, you know, I know Alex Ullman has been posting from Gathering Magic. He likes to post these. He's sort of the Pauper person to go to. So if you ever want to play Pauper, definitely hit him up. And he's been sort of tracking the metagame recently. And I remember when we were getting ready for the Community Super League, my friend Tom had that deck on him. And we were still trying to figure out what deck we were going to play. And he's like, have you ever played Drake? And he's like, I'm going to tell you right now. He's like, don't play it. And I was like, but you just told it. He's like, I'm going to tell you. He's like, first off, he's like, there's too many triggers. He was like, and you're playing on Magic Online. He's like, it's going to be a nightmare. And he goes, number two, the audience will hate you. I was like, what do you mean? And so then like, and so I'd never faced it before. And then we played it on paper. And then when he showed me like what the loop was, I was like, oh, this is why Twitch would hate us. Got it. And it's broken.
Yeah. I've played the deck on Magic Online just to get a feel for it. It takes a very long time and a lot of clicking to do the whole loop.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a fun deck to play, or I guess it's my idea of a fun deck to play. I don't know about other people's.
Drake fans love it.
Yeah, I guess so.
But do Drake fans love it?
Oh, geez.
I'm sorry. I mean, I saw people talking about Drake on my feed this morning, and I didn't know if they were talking about the rapper or the deck.
It's completely justified.
I love it.
I mean, his verse and only wasn't that great. I mean, just saying. So there was another announcement today that got people really excited about pile shuffling. So Katie, being our judge du jour, why don't you break it down for us?
Yeah, so most every time there's a new set, sometimes new policies and updates to the Magic Tournament rules come out. And the biggest one out of this one, or the one that most people are talking about, is pile shuffling. So if you don't know what pile shuffling is, which I think most people do, it's where you lay your cards face down, usually in 5 to 7 different piles, and then you go through a pattern where you put one card on each pile, and that's how you shuffle. There's been a lot of debate recently about if pile shuffling is actually randomizing a deck, because technically you could know the order of your deck before pile shuffling and then theoretically know the order afterwards because you put them all down in a certain order. If you pick them up in a certain order, you still know the order of them. Most people don't do that. thank God. That's a lot of brain power. But anyway, the change that was made is just kind of more clearly defining shuffling in Magic in general. And the sentence that kind of matters out of the card shuffling section is, pile shuffling alone is not sufficiently random and may not be performed more than once anytime a deck is being randomized. So, you are allowed to pile shuffle. A lot of people use it to count their opponent's deck, make sure all 60 cards are there, make sure all 40 cards are there and limited. So you are allowed to do it once. It's mostly supposed to be for card counting purposes, but it also, you know, is thought of as a randomization tool, even though it's really not. And it cannot be performed more than once anytime a deck is being randomized. Your opponent might be a little upset if every time they fetch in Modern, you want to pile shuffle their deck and make sure that all their cards are still there. I know.
Do people do that?
I think people do, but it's pretty poo-pooed on because it can be looked at as stalling or trying to tick the clock down. So basically, it's just saying don't use that as your main method of shuffling. And hopefully that kind of clears it up for everyone. Because it wasn't addressed earlier, whether it was shuffling, whether it wasn't shuffling, how many times you could do it and all that. So they just added one sentence, cleared it up, and hopefully everybody can just shuffle a different way now.
I can't say I've ever experienced that before, but I have had opponents do it multiple times during mulligans. Mm-hmm. Which always drives me nuts. So like they'll do the pile shuffle before they present for the initial, you know, and for the before they draw their initial seven. And that's cute. Okay, fine. You just got done. Sorry. Chris is not even having it. Not nope. even that. Nope. So they do that and I'm fine with that because especially if you just came back from like, so if this is round one of our game and you just came back from your previous one and you want to make sure you're at 60, that's fine. But then they're like, nope, they ship it back. And then prior to drawing their six, they do it again. And I've had opponents that'll go to five and they do it again. And then at that point, I'm like, okay, no, you did it once. You know there's 60 in there. Obviously, it's not working for you because you're having to mulligan repeatedly. That drives me nuts. And so that's the only time. And so can I call a judge at that point? Like, what can I do?
So it depends. Whenever mulliganing, you're supposed to have a reasonable amount of time to shuffle. And I feel like there are some people who pile shuffle really slowly. And I don't think anybody's going to deny that. But you're watching them and you're like, you're going at the pace of a turtle. My grandma could pile shuffle faster than you right now. So I think, you know, in some cases, I think it is warranted to just be like, hey, you know, we're running out of time. Maybe if you could just pick up the pace of that shuffle, that'd be great. And I think sometimes I've definitely been in the spot where like I drew all seven lands or something on my opening seven and I decide to mull and I do a pile shuffle and I think it's just kind of like a habit, like somewhere in my brain it's like this will break up that land pocket better than just regular shuffling would. So I've definitely been that person, but I also try and do it pretty fast. So I think if the person's doing it at a reasonable pace, there's a lot of people who can shuffle super fast at pile shuffling. You know, it's not a huge deal, although it can seem like an eternity. But if they're taking too long, feel free to call a judge because, you know, that's not supposed to be their main form of shuffling anyway. So it's really a waste of time. But it's kind of just a, I don't want to call it a stigma. I don't know, a habit in like the MTG society that just
maybe like a superstition that people feel like, oh my God, this works when in reality it doesn't.
Yes, yes. And we just need to quash that.
Yeah. And Chris, you're not having it at all.
No, I just find the whole thing just so funny. And my eye is still twitching from Katie even suggesting that people would do it after I fetch. it's like, I'm sorry. Iron Titan Shift, we don't have time for this. Yeah, like, no. It's just like, what? And like, I'll pile shuffle, but I only ever do it, you know, if I do mulligan, like I'll just hand shuffle a couple times. I'll be like, I'm just going to pile shuffle once, hand shuffle, here you go. Done. But if you cannot do that in a timely fashion, this probably isn't for you.
Right.
Yeah. I don't pile shuffle to count my cards. I just count my sideboard because it's faster. So I'll do is I'll look at my sideboard, make sure that 15 is there, make sure it's the right 15, and then I go. And that's just sort of my shorter way. And ad nauseum doesn't fetch, dredge doesn't fetch, so I don't really have that problem. I'll admit that I need to get better at actually shuffling my opponent's deck. Like I tend to just cut. And I do need to get better at actually like picking it up, mixing it up a little bit because I don't do that. And that's something I've been told that when you're at competitive REL, you need to get better at that. So that's something I'm willing to commit to, but I'm not about to start pile shuffling and I'm certainly not about to watch you start pile shuffling. So, I'm so petty that like I've wanted to bring out like a nail file and be like, no, it's cool. I'll wait. Just my turn. Are we good? Oh, yeah. Just let me know. So Hallie, do you have any thoughts on pile shuffling?
I I don't even know.
Do you pile shuffle? You hesitated.
I do pile shuffle. Generally what I do is I pile shuffle once just to count and make sure all my cards are there, especially, okay, you know, if I've played, you know, in some formats, like sometimes your cards end up on the other side of the table, like your opponent has taken something, your opponent has taken one of your permanents, or you have an enchantment on one of their creatures or something. So I usually just try to count and make sure all my cards are there, and that's the main reason why I pile shuffle. But it's usually like a hand shuffle followed by a pile shuffle followed by another hand shuffle. So I think it's good for counting cards, but I agree that it's not sufficient to randomize.
Yeah.
And another thing that really bugs me about pile shuffling is like when somebody hand shuffles and they've done it for so long that you're like, they're going to present any minute. And then they pile shuffle and I'm just like, what? What are you doing? What are you doing? Just do, oh God, just do that first. But and like, it's gotcha. Been like, it's been like a solid 2 minutes and you're like, I'm ready to present. They're going to present. We'll get the show on the road. And then you're like, no, no, stop. Just pick them back up. Don't do anything. Just another pet peeve. Sorry.
I think I figured out the next line of the song. So it's, I don't want no shrubs. Shrub is a guy who can't pile shuffle for me. We can do this. We can do this. So in addition to the announcements that come from the pre-release, there was also the post-Kaladesh premiere play announcement, and it came with the reveal of several playmats. We got to see the GP Atlanta, GP London playmats, which are gorgeous, GP Kuala Lumpur in Providence, which is the beautiful Sky Sovereign console flagship, Dak Faden, Eldrazi Temple is going to be at the European Legacy Championship, GP Santiago is Rashmi, which is gorgeous, Jace the Mind Sculptor, will be one of the Eternal Weekend playmats along with Richard and Port. GP Dallas, which I will be going to with Chris, is going to be Mox Opal, which is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. GP Rotterdam, a couple of the inventors, and the, Ceremonious Rejection, the blue counter.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Chris, mm-hmm. did you get your life from this?
I really did, actually.
the vapors.
It really was like that. So at first I, like, when I saw the link, I was like, oh, what's gonna be in here? I'm like, oh my God. So.
Did you have to pace yourself? Like, scroll down really slowly? Like, inch?
It's, okay, yeah. sort of like that. I really dug the flagship, playmat quite a bit, so I definitely want to get one of those. Dak Faden's always cool. I met the Eldrazi Temple one because I don't really play Eldrazi. Is it Rashmi Eternity's yeah. Crafter? Rashmi, holy shit. Yeah. It's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's everything. I want it.
So, I'm still convinced, and I'm gonna go on a Vorthos tangent here. I would love it if she was Mishra. I would get my life like you have no idea.
Tinfoil hat. Love it. The Jace one, duh, it's Jace. I would have to have one of those. And then, yes, I agree. The Mox Opal, Matt, it looks just beautiful. I like that with the GP Rotterdam situation, you know, the team gets the three playmats and they get to distribute it however they wish between the three of them. And the GP Chiba one with Crucible of Worlds, I died. Oh my God. It's so beautiful. And it just, it looks exactly just like it should. And I'm just dying because I want it actually quite a bit. And then there was the GP Atlanta mat, which goes along with, the story Torch of Defiance. And it has Chandra and Liliana overlooking Kaladesh. And I thought that was really awesome. And I would really like to have one. However, this is kind of like playmat gate right now. this is an exclusive playmat that they're giving away at GP Atlanta. And there's a little bit of a to-do with it. SCG decided that if you did not register for GP Atlanta by September 9th, you would not receive the playmat with your registration. And I have some feelings about that. and it may seem minor just because, you know, it's just a playmat, but it's really not. For me, the playmat is part of the incentive for going to these larger events like Grand Prix, you know, whether or not you go to like an open, you know, for the Star City Circuit and other events, you usually get a playmat. You usually get something to commemorate that event. And I think that whether or not this, I assume it was Star City's choice to do this, I think it was a pretty poor move. This is going to be the first limited GP to feature this brand new set, which comes out this weekend. And to choose to not let you register and receive the playmat 2 weeks before we can even play with the cards, even in a pre-release, just seems pretty poor. The statement that they made about GP Atlanta in relation to the mats was as follows. This change was made to ensure that everyone planning on participating in the main event would still have an opportunity to receive Grand Prix Atlanta's exclusive playmat as part of their main event registration package, while simultaneously incentivizing those fans to register approximately a month in advance so we can better plan the event and enhance the overall experience for everyone in attendance. I have a few things about that. You say you want everyone who's playing the main event to receive a playmat, and that's why you did this. But last I checked, you can still register for the event. It hasn't capped yet, and I assume you would have enough to cover the participants because you are capping it at 4,500 people. There are 11 days left to register for this, and I was personally planning on going, and I was more incentivized to play in the main event and skip challenges, which I was originally going to do, because of this limited format. And it seems like something that I would really love. But now you're taking away something that's meant to enrich that experience and provide us with the product necessary to play in the event, which retails for under $30, and a deck box that I can buy from you on a site or at an open tour stop for $299. And while I understand that running an event is no small feat and it is super costly, the money that we pay you to attend these events in a mini and a playmat that, you know, retails for $25 to $50 does not give all players their money's worth, in my opinion. Some players want swag, some people don't, but I don't think that you should eliminate it completely, especially if your goal is, as per your statement, to ensure that everyone planning gets a mat. And I guess it's been some kind of point of contention on their Facebook. I thought about sending them a tweet and being like, why did you decide to go this way? Because it just seemed very, very odd. And I'm just kind of disappointed that, you know, you're going to take something away from people that they like to have, especially when you're paying $85 to participate in a Grand Prix. And you're also purporting yourself to be the world's largest Magic the Gathering retailer, but you can't supply enough playmats for a potential number of 4,500 people. So I'm a little salty, I will admit. I don't know why, you know, this happened. I would still like to get the mat, but the only way I can do it now is you have to participate in the the 3 day infinite challenge. You don't get it for doing the 1 day infinite challenge. You have to do the 3 day one, and it's $100, and it's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, I had a couple of thoughts on this. You know, we talked about this on Magic Mike's because I happen to work with a couple of people who know Star City pretty well. and so I had a couple issues with this. The first thing, I guess, that really bothered me was that Star City was sort of the company that championed playmats for all. You know, they were the ones that kind of put that on the map of, you know, this didn't used to be a thing, so we're going to make it so that people, everybody gets a playmat. And that's something that they've done with the Open Series even. You know, you can play, you can even get different kinds of playmats. You know, you can play in the main event on Saturday, get a playmat with a certain design on it. And then if you happen to not make day two and you play in one of the side events, like one of the classics on Sunday, you can get a mat as well. And that's even a different mat. Like the classic, like let's say, so SCG Milwaukee is next month, which you and I are going to, Chris. And so the modern main event has one mat, and then the standard and legacy classics have different mats. So they've sort of been the ones to put that on the map to make that a thing. And so for them to be the ones to sort of champion this change seems really strange. If this had come from like Legion or PES or Pastimes, I wouldn't be as surprised because they really weren't the ones that put this kind of thing on the map. The other thing that really bothered me is that they buried the lead. Like if you go on the GP Atlanta playmat, you have to scroll all the way to the bottom. Yeah. And even then, it's like buried in a paragraph to see that. So like you're reading the front page, and I'm on it right now, and it's like, welcome to GP Atlanta. Here's all the cosplayers you can see. Here's all the artists you can see. Here's all the vendors you can shop from. Here's all the amazing packages you can see. You can pre-reg with sleep-in specials. So they're getting you all hyped up. Like, okay, oh my God, this is great. This is great. And by that point, frankly, who's going to read all the way to the bottom? Like, you're already seeing all this. I'm fucking in. Like, you're reading this, you're loving it. Then you see the beautiful playmat. And if you're still reading, you're like, oh, where do I sign? Like, you're so fucking hyped at this point. And then you get all the way to the bottom. And then they say, please note that the playmat will only be included after this time. I just think that was really shady. We're like, if this is mm-hmm. something you're going to do, especially if it's something you haven't done before, I really feel like that should have been more closer to the top. Like, this is something we're trying, you know, and then, you know, kind of, or just put it somewhere else. Like, I really felt that was kind of malicious almost. And maybe malicious is too strong of a word, but I just felt like that could have been handled better. You know, and if you are trying to, I understand that getting people to pre-reg is a pain in the ass. You know, I remember the GP Pittsburgh fiasco where, you know, people were waiting until like the week of. Like, I think that's a little not okay, but a month? I mean, again, we're Magic players. Like, 30 days? Like you said, Chris, people hadn't even had a chance to, like, play with the set yet, enough to know whether or not they were going to like this format to want to come out to the event. You know, that was a serious misfire, I think. And, you know, I think in general, this could have been handled better, and I would like to think that going forward, they will have learned something from this.
Mm-hmm. Chris, do you think that it would have been any better if they had offered, like, a decreased entry fee after whatever the date was, like, since you weren't getting a playmat? Like, do you think that would have made it any better, or would you still be as, you know, upset as you are?
It's weird because for some people, things are about money. Like, me, I don't really care that much about the money in and of itself. For me, the playmat is just part of the experience, you mm-hmm. know, and especially for some of these people that may be coming to a GP for the first time, you know, and they've heard maybe stories from friends. Oh, yeah. And, you know, depending on the TO, you might get sleeves, you might get a deck box. Oh, but you always get a playmat. That seems to be, I have never in my life been to a Grand Prix where you didn't get a playmat. Like, mm-hmm. if they exist, please let me know. But that's just never been a thing. And I'm totally in support of pre-registering. Like, I really am. But for this, it was just like, this is a limited GP. This is for a set that isn't even out yet. If this was modern, if this was standard, if it was legacy, sure. I can understand if you're trying to make sure that people are going to attend your event and you can cover your cost. That I can completely understand. But the fact that people don't even know if they're going to like it, that to me was the sticking point of it. And they didn't have multiple tiers. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. that's one of the other things is, you know, for a lot of Grand Prix, you're paying $60+ to go. I think when, the last GP I went to was Indy. And like, I think the minimum registration was $60 or $70, but you still got a playmat. So, it's just weird. And like, maybe I'm a little biased because of, you know, the playmat hoarding, like I, you know, there is that, but I think just in and of itself, it's just another little small thing just about, you know, Grand Prix in general, you know, just that there are little things here and there that people find issues with, whether or not it's, you know, the lack of price support going up over the years, whether or not, you know, in this situation, it's, you know, a playmat that isn't being offered by this particular TO. And, you know, I guess the thing that really scares me is, are you telling me that you don't have enough playmats to cover 4,500 people? Like, that is equally concerning. And I guess I just would like to know what the story is and why they would release a statement that contradicts itself in and of itself. And it's just unfortunate. And I just, you know, I just would prefer to, if you don't have them, just tell me you don't have them, you know, or whatever the situation is, just be real. Like, mm-hmm. don't give me some corporatese thing about why you're not going to do this. And again, like I said, it just comes down to, it's a new set that's coming out. You're advertising that, you know, this is the first time you're going to get to experience this format on a grand scale. And then you're like, P.S. You had to register by September 9th before any pre-releases happened, before the set released. And I just think that's kind of ridiculous. So
yeah, I mean, you can't tell me, like I said, I mean, there were people probably coming off of this weekend that freaking loved it and maybe weren't sold before, but now they are. And, you know, that's a thing. And it just could have been handled better. And oh, and I have another one. Here we go. Hanging at the registration desk trying to scout people just for a lousy playmat. No shrubs. We are doing no shrubs.
No shrubs.
Just saying. So it's a thing. So before we go, we need to say goodbye to some things. So farewell to Standard. Rotation happens this Friday. Collected Company gone. Dragon Lord Silumgar gone. We are looking at a whole new Standard. And I thought it might be fun just to kind of touch on the cards that we're either going to miss or that we will not miss. And so, you know, Katie, I think the last time you played at GP Oakland with us. Have you played a lot of Standard since?
Well, I played at GP Portland in early August. And I played Collected Company.
Well, that's right.
And it was fun, but bye, girl. You done. I'm also excited to see Dromoka's command go. I felt like there was like so many matches in all of Standard while Dromoka's command that was in was like, if they have it, I'm screwed. If they don't, I'm golden. I guess we'll just wing it and see. I'm not sad to see Narset or Sarkhan go. I felt like they had no impact. I will miss Celestial Flare. I didn't even realize that was still like really in Standard.
I didn't either.
I will miss it. I kind of had a soft spot in my heart. So, yeah, I am excited to see Collected Company go and get some new players in.
Yeah, I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with Collected Company, and I have for a long time. I really like playing Coco. I really hated playing Coco Mirrors. Mm-hmm. So I, as much fun as I had playing it, I think it's about time that I can say goodbye to it. I was also sad to see Jace Vryn's Prodigy go. And I'm sad that he hasn't been doing as much work in this past Standard as he did in the previous Standard. You know, with fetch lands, you could flip him really easily. And I was thinking, oh, well, I mean, if he doesn't flip as much, that just means you get to loot more and you get to draw more cards, and drawing cards is great, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I am sad to see him go. Hopefully he'll see a little bit more play in some non-rotating formats, but we'll see. I'm trying to think of other cards that I'm going to miss. I'm with Katie on the Dromoka's Command thing, though. I'm not going to miss that card. I played it a lot. I played against it a lot. It made for some really interesting situations, but I'm not sure how I feel about that. One card that I am definitely happy to say goodbye to, though, is Hangerback Walker. Especially with, you know, an artifact block coming up. Because if Hangerback Walker were in the same format as Syndicate Trafficker, I don't know what I would do.
I would play it.
I would, but I would also lose my damn mind. So I don't know. I'm happy to see Hangerback Walker go.
Yeah, I didn't play much Standard. You know, I'm not really a fan of Standard for a couple of reasons. I did really enjoy playing Esper Dragons, though, when we were at GP Oakland. And, you know, I've talked before about how I really struggle with control decks sometimes because I never know when to turn the corner, when to close the game out. And I really just loved everything about Esper Dragons. I really enjoyed that sort of protect the queen kind of style of play where you have, you know, this really great threat in Ojutai and it's hexproof, you know, when it's untapped, and you really have to, you know, think about when you want to take the plunge and attack with him, and you know how to protect that and what you're going to do if something happens to Ojutai. And I really enjoyed Flip Jace. I just had enjoyed playing control more than I ever have before, and I really wish I had kind of clued into that deck a little sooner, maybe when Dig Through Time was still around. You know, I was really sad that the deck kind of evolved into more of a Grixis spiel after rotation. That really wasn't my style of control, and so that was probably the most fun that I had this Standard, was playing Esper Dragons. I really enjoyed Silumgar and Ojutai. Fly and Flip Jace and, you know, Fetching and Languish. We don't have any blackboard wipes this time around, at least until Either Revolt. So that's kind of weird. We're going to have to deal with like Rising Miasma and Flaying Tendrils, which is not good. You know, I kind of worry about what's going to happen to Delirium after that, but, I am excited for some of these Emerge decks. One of my friends has been working on Sultai Emerge for a while, Sultai Zombies, if you will. I love Dead Things. That's really up my alley. Shaheen Sarani has sort of officially endorsed the black red control deck, which if you know Shaheen, he's been an Esper fan for as long as I can remember. So for him to endorse that is a huge deal. I'm really looking forward to this new set, and I really hope it can inject some lifeblood into this format. And I certainly won't miss Coco. I certainly won't miss Dramica's Command. Yeah, I'm just anxious for something new. I'm kind of sad to see Nissa go. I think Nissa Fastwood Seer was really good. And yeah, that's kind of my thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the command's going. This is fine. I mean, we still deal with Kolaghan's Command in Modern, but I'm fine with dealing with it in Modern. Secure the Waste, you know, was a card that lots of people loved. It can probably still find a good place in Modern. Coco, I'm done. It was part of the reason why I didn't really do a lot of Standard. The Origins Planeswalkers are all going to go, and that's kind of sad because I think that some got more play than others, and some only got to shine for just a little bit of time before, you know, there was a reason that they weren't playable or just as good anymore. No more Cat Pact.
Oh my god, I'm gonna miss Demonic Pact. Weebles. You know what else I'm gonna miss? Yeah, Weebles. You know what else I'm gonna miss is Starfield and X.
Oh, yeah. It's like, then you remember, and you're like, oh, no.
But there's still hope in Modern. There's still that janky-ass Enchantress deck in Modern.
P and Kieran are going to go, but, you know, I guess that is completely appropriate to give Pia her own way to shine, you know, in Kalidash.
She don't need no man. She don't need no shrub. He's literally a shrub. He's dead.
No more tutelage decks for those that loved that. And my Thopter's deck, unfortunately, that I played for like a while, kind of got nuked after a while, and now those wonderful Thoptery ladies are going to be gone. Hangerback Walker, this is fine. And Painlands are gone too.
I forgot about tutelage.
Mm-hmm.
I had some good times with that, especially when you paired it with goggles. Or we're losing goggles too.
Goggles.
But yeah, when you would do goggles and tutelage, whee! That was lots of fun.
So I'm just looking forward to new stuff. Like I'm ready to go. I was over Dragons like a while ago, and I'm just looking forward to seeing what happens next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anything else on our minds while we wrap up the show? So I have something. I've decided that I'm going to play in the MTGO Legacy Challenge in 2 weeks, which is on October 8th. And I will be taking Dredge, and I've decided that I'm going to stream it. So if you want to watch me take on a legacy event, I will be at twitch.tv/originalestrus. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I don't get to play nearly enough legacy, and so I'm kind of grinding away a little bit, trying to figure out what my 75 is going to be. I still have no idea what I'm going to play yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. I think the legacy challenges are a lot of fun. I think they're certainly doing their part to keep the legacy format alive. I'm also pretty much a lock for GP Louisville, which is in January. I have a friend who happens to live in Louisville, so she said I could come stay with her. So if you are going to GP Louisville in January, it's the first weekend of January, I'd love to meet you. I'm just looking forward to playing a lot more Legacy because I think Modern's pretty much set. Like, I'm just going to play Ad Nauseam at SCG Milwaukee, and then we're going to GP Dallas, so that's pretty much a lock. And the Modern meta really hasn't changed that much, so I feel very confident in that deck choice. But I'm really looking forward to spending the rest of the year kind of playing more Legacy and just getting better at certain matchups. Like, I haven't faced Eldrazi nearly enough, and just kind of representing my people, trying out some of the new Kaladesh cards that I think could make the cut, and just looking forward to dredging my brains out for the next couple months.
Fun.
Yeah. So if anybody enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can find me on Snapchat at HalCanSan. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Card Kingdom newsletter. I do work for them now.
Yes, your article was fantastic.
It was.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at meanmugger. That's MEANMUGGER or twitch.tv/meanmuggermtg. Or I am on Snapchat at katie.neil14.
I love your snaps, by the way.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I keep sending them.
Yeah, they're great.
Although I really just there for Watson. So like if you have to be in the picture, that's fine. But like it's just Watson's.
I think most people are there for Watson. I just sometimes interject myself when I'm feeling
and more Weebles. Ambitious. I demand more Weebles.
Well, yeah. So he lives in Bozeman still, so it's hard for me to snap him.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just
okay.
For this year, I'll have him back in May, but okay. For right now, he's not here. So I'll try and find.
He's gonna be so big.
I know he's like already a full grown cat, and I just missed it. So. Now he's
missed all those moments.
I know. I'm having like emptiness syndrome or something.
Aww. He'll hold it against you later. And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ@gmail.com. My Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. I'm slowly trying to get better at that. It was like the hot thing for a minute, and then I was like, maybe not.
Yeah, me too.
And my blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I should have something coming up very soon. And I think that's it.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAsterus. That's OriginalAsterus. You can email me at OriginalAsterus@gmail.com, twitch.tv/OriginalAsterus, Snapchat, OriginalAsterus. Yeah, pretty much anything with that name you can find me at. The show is on Twitter at @TheGFBracket. You can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. And we come out every Friday at GatheringMagic.com, Patreon.com/TheGirlfriendBracket if you'd like to toss us a couple bucks. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.